And we've got open lines for you here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Brendan Cook from the Ghost Investigator Society sent us an EVP sound that I'm going to play for you in just a second. It's up there on the coasttocoastam.com website under the highlights reel if you want to take a listen to it. This was done in an old building where he went back years ago and they recorded a drowning voice. Now, you got to listen to these things really closely, but here it is. Now, that is one of the cleanest ones I've ever heard. What this woman ghost or whatever it was saying was, put that thing in his eyes. Listen.
Put that thing in his eyes. Put that thing in his eyes. Put that thing in his eyes.
Did you hear that? That was pretty darn close to put that thing in his eyes. I mean, it's one of the better ones I've heard in a long time. How he got it, what's out there, anybody's guess. Anyways, we're going to have open lines for you in a second. I'm going to open up a special hotline for you, too. I want you to share your strange stories with us, whatever they might be, at 818-817-0021. That's 818-817-0021. That's our hotline for the strange storyline on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are back with open lines now on Coast to Coast AM. That's our Friday night and the Saturday morning specialty for you. Let's pick it up by going to the state of Washington, west of the Rockies. Mason is with us. Hey, Mason, good morning.
Hey, morning, George.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for doing what you do. I think you're serving a very wonderful purpose that's necessary.
You are welcome. You know, I learned a long time ago. I just want to get to the truth of things. And
that's what we need, more truth. There's not enough of that going around.
Yeah, that's so true.
My question is, are you familiar with the speculation that the area around the Black Sea might be the root of the Atlantis legend? But right at the end of the last ice age, the sea levels were lower than they are now, and the Bosporus was dry land. And there have been people going in the Black Sea with bathyscaphs, diving bells. And I read something somewhere that someone had seen the foundation of a building 600 feet down, which is approximately how much the sea level has risen, or the Black Sea level has risen after the Bosporus flooded.
That's amazing. So it's risen that high, or do you think there's also some sinkage of whatever was there?
The Black Sea, you had no outlet before the last ice age. Water didn't come in from the Mediterranean over the Bosporus because the sea levels were too low. And all the it evaporated, and the level was much below sea level, kind of like Death Valley.
Yeah. Okay.
And
it just fills right up.
Yeah, and even now there's like a two levels of water there. There's the old fresh water and a couple hundred feet of salt water above it, and it's basically dead because of that, because of lack of oxygen from, I don't know, something interaction there.
Why did they think Atlantis was there as opposed to just some kind of city?
You know, I kind of think personally myself that it's just an old legend that carried on by word of mouth for thousands of years, and nobody really knew where it was by the time Plato heard about it. There's been some speculation that it was the Minoan civilization on Santorini when that was.
That's right, yeah.
You know, and the tsunami might have been why the Red Sea parted for Moses. Who knows?
Great mysteries of this planet.
Yeah. At any rate, after the glaciers melted, the Black Sea became a huge waterfall and filled that in. And who knows what was down there before?
Is that still a great resort area for those folks?
So I've read, yeah, the Russians, Ukrainians, I guess.
Old Khrushchev used to go out there a lot in those days.
I remember him, but yeah. I was pretty young.
He's a guy who took his shoe off and started smashing it at the UN, going, "We will bury you."
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Wild man. Sure was. Okay, hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks, George.
All right, Mason. Next up, we go to Los Angeles. John's with us, first-time caller. Hey, John, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
I was explaining to the man that answered the phone, I worked inside NORAD in the command center, 1976 to 78. And one of my responsibilities was recording, receiving the calls of UFOs and unknowns.
How many did you get?
Over the three-year period?
Yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds.
Really? That many?
Absolutely.
Of the hundreds, how many do you think were really legit, the rest They were just seeing things.
Well, another responsibility that was ours was determining what could be correlated to an aircraft or a weather balloon or whatever, or what wasn't something that we knew about. Well, we had a few situations where something was flying over the north, let's say from New York all the way over to Montana, and it was only taking minutes to get there. And no matter what we would launch as an interceptor or ahead of time to intercept them, we couldn't catch them.
Who were the people who were calling you most of the time, John? Were they military folks or just all kinds of people got through?
The way it would go would whoever saw the object would call the local base military installation. That military installation would route the conference calls directly to us at Side NORAD. And so we would take the whatever they saw, fill it in on what was called a Form 19. Form 19s are UFOs and unknowns. And so sometimes they were civilians, sometimes they were military people, sometimes they were actual pilots, civilian or military, seeing something current.
What do you think was the most compelling call you ever got?
The most compelling was when I can't remember if it was a Russian bear or Russian crate that flew over, I think it was,
doesn't matter, that's okay.
A big naval station in on the East Coast, and it flew over about 60 miles and made a U-turn and went back, and it flew over so fast that we couldn't get anything in the air to intercept it, but there was visual sightings from the naval guys on their ship.
What did they see?
There's nothing they could do. We launched interceptors, and I have no idea at that time, if it was F-4s, F-16s, F whatever they were at the time, near that base. But this Russian plane flew over so quickly that we couldn't intercept it.
Oh, it could have been a Russian plane then. What was it?
It was an actual Russian plane. There was visual sightings from military people on the base watching it fly over.
They had a plane that went that fast then?
Well, you have to take into consideration that a lot of bases have the quickest a plane could get launched would be maybe 15 minutes. Some places 5 minutes. Some places 15, some places a half hour. And so at that time, at that base, in that area, the plane couldn't get off the ground in less than 15 minutes because what's the chances of something like that happening?
Amazing. Let me ask you one more question, John. You weren't there, you weren't working, but was NORAD told to stand down during 9/11? What have you heard?
Well, I've been out of the military since 1978, and the responsibilities of NORAD has changed incredibly. So there's nobody that, except for maybe the president, that would tell that installation to stand down. I mean, I worked directly for Chappie James, four-star, the first black four-star general in the Air Force.
Yep. One of the best.
One of the best. And nobody told us what to do, except for maybe the president
or the vice president.
Situation. I'm sorry?
Or the vice president.
Or the vice president. But nobody ever told us to stand down. We had a specific responsibility defending North American Air Defense Command Center or the North America. But we also, it was a joint service job. We worked with British, Canadians, a number of different.
But it's changed now. It really has. John, thanks. I'm going to take a few more calls before our break. We go next to Carl in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Welcome to the show, Carl. Go ahead.
Good morning, George.
Morning.
Pleasure to speak with you. The story that I have to share, and I wish I could have talked to the gentleman that you just had.
The skeptic.
My father passed away from pneumonia February 11th, and this is probably the first time I can share this story without crying.
I understand. I lost mine in December.
My father was a very religious man, prayed daily. In fact, our family is Catholic, so my dad would literally pray the rosary 10 times a day. And he was, at the end, he had pneumonia, But my dad was very, very frail. In other words, he could get around a little bit with a walker.
How old was he?
82.
Okay.
And had a long, loving relationship with my mom, you know, married for 58 years. And my father, because he was so frail, just had to wear very, very lightweight clothes. Like my mom would buy him the lightest weight pants, you know, shirts and everything, just to make it easier, lightweight, you know, slippers so my dad could get a, so my dad could get around more easily. And we finally got to the point where the other day where we could go through some of the things that, you know, he was wearing right before he passed away, you know, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And as my mom and I are going through his things that on the chair were the pants and the shirt that he wore before he went to he went to the hospital with the paramedics. And my mom went to pick them up, and she sat down and she started to cry. I said, "Mom, what's the matter?" That my dad's pockets, front and back pockets, were full of change, literally full to the top with coins. And like I said, my father never had anything in his pockets because he was so frail. But George, they were, each one was full of coins to the very top, where they would fall out, and it was my dad talking to my mom and me saying that I'm here with you.
Yeah, it is. A little message.
And so that's the story I wanted to share.
All right. Thanks for sharing that with us. There's a way of communicating. There is a way. I'm waiting for mine. I haven't gotten mine yet, but there is a way. Let's go to Duke in Middletown, Ohio. East of the Rockies. Hey, Duke, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, George.
Sure.
I think you've told us before that you were a public information officer in the Navy.
I sure was. 9 years. I was a 1655 designator.
I'm just curious. In all the time you were in this job, was there ever a time that you purposely gave the public fictitious or false information, or that you were ordered to do so, or that you saw someone else do it knowing that it was fictitious or misleading information?
No, my primary responsibilities were several fold. Let me mention what I did. One, I was assigned to the Pentagon as a fill-in officer whenever the main guys would go to lunch or nighttime. You would man what was a public information desk in case worldwide something happened. God forbid, anything Navy related, it would funnel to you, and then you'd have to be taking the calls from the media if it came. I never got any at all. I also went to Pensacola for my officer's training, and I did various drilling all throughout the country, but never at any point did anybody ever tell me what to or not to do or what to deceive. Never. It never even came up.
Terrific. Okay, then a second quick question. A week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, you had a caller who told you that he was a former police officer and that he had some interesting UFO information. And you asked him to stay on the line, and you were going to get back with him. Did you ever do that, or will he be a future guest?
Tom's got the number, and we're still talking to him.
Okay. You think he's legit?
Yeah, I think he might be.
Yeah, well,
I think he might
like
be.
To hear the, like to hear you call the guy, get the guy on the air.
I would say of the 10 calls we get from people, 8 of them are legit, and 2 are people trying to have some fun, which is a pretty good rate.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's nothing to sneeze at.
No,
that's pretty good.
Not at all. Not at all.
All right, George. Thanks very much.
Thanks. Appreciate the call. Phyllis is in Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hey, Phyllis, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. You're in Blaine, aren't you?
Excuse me?
You're in Blaine. That's a neat little town.
Oh, no. Boring, actually.
Oh.
B-O-R-I-N-G.
Okay.
It was named after Mr. Boring.
Okay. Go ahead.
But it's not very boring here.
No. Not with you there.
Oh, thank you. I don't know about that. I was just wondering if you'd heard anything about Lake Vostok lately. Since the scientists, of course, the research area has been shut down because of the winter conditions down there, but I haven't heard anything since then about the Russian scientists pulling the core out of any discoveries they may have made?
Well, I think they should have pulled the core out by now, because it was several weeks ago they busted through.
Right.
And at that time, the Russians said, we don't have any statements yet, but will be. But, of course, there's literally a blackout down there. There's no other media down there. And so I don't know what's going on. But we've got some people who are in the know, and they're checking. Originally, they thought that the Russian scientists had been lost, but they popped up a couple days after that.
Yeah, well, I knew that if anybody had any information first, that it would be
you. It'll be us, cutting edge, all the time.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Thank you for taking my call. You have a good night.
You too. Days, perhaps weeks, before the mainstream media picks up on a story, we will have it for you first here on Coast to Coast AM. Let us go to Greg in Antioch, California. What's on your mind, Gregory?
Hey, George, longtime listener. How
Thank you.
Doing?
Good.
Hey, I've been listening to conspiracies for almost two decades now. A lot of people going back to Art Bell. He was the original. But I decided to do something possibly stupid on January 1st of 2012. I contacted Genesis Communications Network and the Alex Jones program director, John.
Okay, yeah.
And I left an email with him concerning some information concerning the Abu Ghraib prison. And I spoke with him briefly for about 2 minutes on the phone. And originally, this was done to test an old William Cooper theory out and to possibly get on the radio and challenge maybe some of the stories that I didn't believe were accurate. When we hung up, within about 10 to 15 minutes, my phone crashed. And then computers started crashing all around me, about four separate ones from four separate friends. Then I started getting calls from guys in my old unit telling me that I needed to take stuff off of Facebook that had to do with Abu Ghraib. And then it got even worse, George.
Were you stationed out there?
I was tasked to close the prison in 2006.
Ah, okay.
After that, I noticed some strange people walking in front of the house and lots of AT&T trucks. Then I got a call from a guy in my unit claiming he was looking at the Alex Jones website, and I couldn't verify it at the time because my computer had crashed, saying that the president of the United States was about to release the child rapist photos of Abu Ghraib, and that I'm sure I'm just this ordinary guy and I'm nothing to worry about. That followed up some weird, strange photos of kids on my Facebook Messenger. It just seemed to get worse and worse between January 1st and 5th to the point where I called 911 about 20 times. And they sent a police officer out briefly, but they really weren't interested in me. They said they were going to send a counselor out, and no one ever came.
A counselor?
A counselor.
Why, did they thought you were a loon or what?
I guess when you call 911 20 times talking about stuff.
Well, that's true.
It does come across weird. So I ended up having my dad drive up from Fresno, and I called 911 again, and they finally took me to the county health, Martinez, where there were actually agents there waiting, but in, like, disguise. It was the weirdest
well,
thing.
Well, that's how they're going to be. They're going to be in disguise. I want you to stay on hold. I want you to give Tom your phone number, because I want to be able to talk to you next week off air for a moment. We'll be back. Well, a few tickets still remaining for my luncheon tomorrow at the Health Freedom Expo in Long Beach, California. Information on that, you can go to our website at coasttocoastam.com under the highlights reel. And also tomorrow, my event, you'll get information on my Toronto event. I'm going to be going all over the country this year. So just track me with our calendar schedule at coasttocoastam.com that you'll find under the host's name right at the top. And, of course, you know, we've got this new technology. We have your Skype lines now, and we also take your text questions. Tom, back in the other studio with a text. From who?
From Isaiah in New Hampshire, and he says, George, I saw something that my sister says was a sign from our dead grandma. Do you believe objects can be signs of things that have happened in a person's life?
Give me an example. What do you think?
It's just a text that came in, but I don't know, maybe he was...
I'm holding you to this.
Okay,
well, you're going to throw a text at me, make sure you know what it is.
Well, there's only so much information I get, but let's suppose he
but
was
you
driving...
you expect me to answer that?
Of course I do.
All right.
So do a lot of people. Maybe he was driving down the street. He saw a bird fly very close to the car. And maybe his sister said, you know what? That's mom saying, how you guys doing?
Or mom loved the birds.
Or grandma in this case.
Yeah, I think so. I think people act with things like the last caller did, who talked about the father leaving coins in his pockets when he never did before. Things like that.
That was a great story.
There are different messages like that. Sure, I think that those on the other side will use whatever resources they can to let you know they're still there.
I believe that, too. I think you're right.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Tom. All right. Next up, now we go to Sacramento, California. Jim's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Hello there.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Hey, I used to listen to you a lot. My dad passed away several years ago, and I would drive between Colorado and Sacramento at night. You're all I got, so I listened to you. But I didn't have cell service, then, so I couldn't call you.
Well, thanks, and I'm sorry for your loss, too.
Well, I appreciate it. It was been several years, but it still hurts. But in any event, you know, the reason for my call tonight was you had a caller, or you had a guest on earlier that was talking about how the aircraft would fly over, and they call them chemtrails.
Yes.
There's no such thing as chemtrails. I shouldn't say that for sure. The only thing I know, I used to work on the C-5. I was in the Air Force for 10 years.
Okay.
And I used to work on the C-5. And in order for the aircraft to fly as high as they do, they have to inject water into the fuel lines so that the fuel would be more efficient so they could fly further and longer periods of time. The only time, and they were never, the chemtrail portion of it was never chem out of the engines. They used to run over air bases, and I would suspect Army bases, Marine Corps bases, and Navy bases as well. They would run C-130s, low-flying aircraft, especially. I was stationed in North Dakota for several years, and they would fly and shoot out mosquito
spray, repellent. Sure. So they were spraying something.
Yeah, but the high, when you see the planes flying high in the stratosphere, it's not chemical. It's water vapor. They can't fly that high without injecting water vapor into the fuel.
Yeah, line. I would think a lot of this would be jet vapor. A lot of it.
Yeah.
But the spraying, that's the puzzling one, you know, because we know they've been trying to manipulate weather and they've been doing some things like that. That's the tough one.
But that, you can't, look at, I was in electronics and everything about an airplane is electronics with the exception of the jet injection, the fuel injection. But even then, there are sensors in there that tell us how much the fuel is mixture with the water vapors and whatnot. If they don't get enough, they have to do things to adjust. And my job was to make sure that all the gauges on the plane work properly. And in order to do that, there had to be a certain amount of moisture and the JP4 or JP8 fuel, depending on which aircraft you're in, to make it operate properly. There would be no way they could put some other chemical in there and the plane operate properly. It just wouldn't work.
If they were spraying, Jim, would you know it? Would they have told you?
Yeah, they would, because if they were spraying it, we would have to wear protective gear. There would be no way for it to operate, because if one of those lines burst inside the cargo bay or inside the cabin, we would be in danger and we would have to be protected. And I never had to wear, aside from an oxygen mask, because there was a hatch that had broken loose or whatever. And it's just like on a commercial plane the little masks would drop down from the compartment above. Well, we would get alarms. As a matter of fact, we'd have to carry our own individual oxygen containers with us and have our masks with us every time we're in the cargo bay. So it wasn't a matter. There was no way that that anything could happen like that. For one thing, if it was being injected into the fuel to be burned through the jet engines, the sensors would let us know that there was not the correct mixture of fuel and water to make it, because other chemicals other than water, and it was purified water because of the rust issue. It had to be demineralized water, and other things that would go through there would corrode, and the plane would not fly properly.
Yeah, a lot of people who talk about these chemtrails claim that they're attached under the wing. Is that possible?
No, it's not possible, because under the wing you have the ailerons and the elevators, and there's just no way to put it. Another reason is you have to have separate tanks. I mean, and you can't separate, because the majority of the fuel that goes into most airliners or any kind of cargo plane is in the wings. So you have to have a separate tank, and C-5s and C-130s and...
The 130's a huge plane, isn't it?
Yeah, C-5's bigger than that. C-5's the biggest plane in the world.
Why would they use planes like that, Jim, for mosquito spraying?
They would use C-130s for the mosquito spray, because it's a smaller plane. It has a shorter takeoff and landing parameter. You didn't need as long a runway to get in and out. And usually when they did that, it was on a base where the target was base housing. And basically the whole base. You'd want to cover the whole base. For example, in North Dakota, one of the sayings was that the state bird was a mosquito. There's so many of them, and they're huge.
Oh, they are huge. Absolutely.
So they would do that in order to keep the population of the air base is military people, and they don't want them to get sick with whatever diseases mosquitoes carry.
They were just talking about a prehistoric flea, which was about an inch and a half long.
Yeah, that's huge.
Oh, how'd you like to have one of those things on you?
No, that would bother me a lot.
Me too.
But anyway, this thing about chemtrails, it's a bunch of bunk. It really, really, there's no way to do it.
I want to get you in touch with Bill Donaldson, who is one of the experts on chemtrails. And then I'd love to get your take on it after you two communicated. That would be interesting. You're one of the few who has a lot of knowledge of the spraying and the planes, and I'd like you to talk with him. Let me take a few more calls here. This night's going by too fast, by the way. Let's go to Dale in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Dale, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Okay, Dale.
I finally get the opportunity to talk with you.
Well, good.
And the reason that I'm calling is I'm amazed. I laugh at myself, and because it's so funny. A lot of things happen to me, and people don't even have an idea of what's going on. When I was in middle school, junior high, I had my first experience. Then we had a special guest come to the school. Her father, a young female, her father brought her, and we blindfolded her. And I took a picture out of a magazine and put it in front of her. It was a picture of a candle. And she put her hand over it. She said, "Oh, it's hot." And I looked, I'm like, what the hell? You know, it really amazed me then. And then after that, I knew something was going on. I had an experience with a woman, one of my coworkers. We went to one of them psychic readings, a party, and it was my turn to go in the room. When I went in the room, this woman sat there, and she looked at me. Her eyes were like cats, like, you know how a cat eye has that
or almost like
diamond shape?
Or like a snake,
too. Right at her eye. Yeah, exactly. I looked at her eye. I'm like, wow. Oh, my God, is this real, or are they contacts?
They could be contacts, right?
But wait a minute. But no, it had to be real. She told me so many things that occurred that night. She said someone was looking for a job. Someone lost a job, and all these things that happened. And the thing that amazed me the most, she said, I see a woman crying in a hospital bed. And I'm like, I said, well, can you see who it is? She said, I don't see who it is. They're crying in a hospital bed. I had a miscarriage. I was pregnant.
Crying in the hospital bed, I bet.
Yes. Okay, I went to the hospital that morning, 7 o'clock, to have a DNC, I guess, just to make sure that I was losing the baby. I was hemorrhaging. When I got out the car, me and my husband, I got out the car, I walked down the walkway. The same woman came out the door, never looked at me. She walked straight down the path. I'm like, oh, my God.
You mean the psychic woman was there?
Yes. I lie to you not. It was so amazing.
That is
she weird. Walked down the path, and I looked at her. She never looked at me, never even turned her head. When I saw her, I said, oh, my God, I'm the woman in the bed crying. It was so amazing. And I'm a Gemini, and I crack up at myself sometimes because a lot of things that happen.
Do you have two personalities?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
I have five. I have. I, you know what? Will oh,
the, then you're not a Gemini. You're Sybil.
Well, I have I'm a Gemini, but I go to bed at night. I dream so much. When I wake up, I'm so tired. I'm like, where have I been? I'm so tired. Off of 12 hours of sleep.
That's too much.
It's like travel. I'm traveling so much, and I never.
I only get like six, and I feel pretty good.
Well, okay, but it's really funny that when I go to bed and I dream, I travel. I go so many places and see so many things. A lot of my family live in Vegas. I went to Vegas a couple of times, and I don't like the way they're acting. It's something going on in Vegas. My sister lives around the corner from Area 51. Something the hell is going on.
I don't know. My son's being transferred out there.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all behind the fact they're different. Their personality has changed. And I'm like, you know, like something's going on. People don't realize that the energy is there. I meet people. I think about them. I see them. And when I think about them, all of a sudden, here they come walking down the street, or I come and focus with them, or I just have so much contact with people, and the things that I think about, they come into reality. As far as numbers, I should have been a numerologist because a lot of things happen.
Have you ever been to our website, numberslady.com? She's one of the best. Dale, thanks for your call. Let's go to Oahu. Ginny, welcome. I just had some friends fly out there today. How are you?
Aloha, George.
Yes.
And I love your show, and this is the third time I'm on, and I have a story for you.
All right.
About proof of something on the other side. And I was wanting to tell you this for years and debated about it because you're on the radio and you can't see it. But now I can send you pictures of it. What happened was right before cancer years ago when I had cancer, we were on the Lynn Taggart show, you and I, a couple years ago about intention.
Oh yeah, that was about 2 years ago.
Yeah, and so right before I was diagnosed with cancer, I was working at an at-risk teen place teaching art, and I was trying to find something to inspire them. And I looked in the National Geographic, and I saw this beautiful photo that stunned me of an Egyptian tomb guard. It was all corroded, and all you could see was the eyes and the bronze. And it was stunning. And I looked at it, and all of a sudden, I heard a voice. Well, this was the first time in my life. And I had full-blown cancer and didn't know it. I had stage 3 advanced breast cancer, and I didn't know it. But this voice said to me, Jeez. And I'd never heard a voice before, it said, carve these. They're guardians. They look something like this. And I'm a sculptor, right? So I went, what was that? I'm looking around the room. I tear out the photo. And I was going to see my Jungian dream analyst that day, and she happens to be a clairvoyant, and she can see spirits on the other side. Well, I came to her, and I said, Virginia, what does this mean? And I told her, and she says, well, she paused, and she said, Ginny, you sure you want to know what this is? And I said, yes, I really do. She says, your aura is getting very big. I guess you do. Well, she says, I see standing behind you 4 guardians, and guardians are different than angels. They protect you in your life, and they guide you on your path, and they're more powerful than angels. They're with you lifetime through lifetime.
And they step in to help, don't they?
Yes, that's right. And she says, but they need you to ask them to help you, and they want you, and they love you and protect you more than you know, and they want other people to know this. So they want you to depict them in art so that they can see them, people can see them. And I went, oh, wow, I'd love to do that, but how do I know what they look like? And she says, they're telling me to tell you to take a chunk of charcoal, get quiet, and big pieces of paper, and just draw, and they'll reveal to you what they look like. And afterwards, I was like stunned, and I was like, what kind of skeptic?
Were they controlling your hand patterns when you were drawing?
That's what happened. It was like automatic drawing.
That's right.
And they were just one, and it was my eyes closed, and these chunks of charcoal. I'm looking at one right now. It's just dust, okay? And if you're an artist, you know you can't manipulate that charcoal. It'll smudge. And there are 2 eyes and nose. I do portraits for a living, and this is like, how did that happen? But the proof is in the dust. It's right here. And I've been wondering what to do with them. So I ran and told my landlord. So 10 years later, I did them and they came up in my art during cancer, where I was diagnosed a year and a half later.
So you think they helped you?
Yes. And they came up in my art, too, and they happened like in 20 minutes.
What do they look like, Ginny?
Well, they have shoulders, and then they have that wispy, you know, ghost-like thing that comes down. And Virginia says that's what things look like through the veil. You just see the shoulders and the head.
Do they have wings?
No, they're they look like people. And since then, when I was in Hawaii doing retreats, three different psychics at different times told me the same thing. They said they saw this one standing in front of me and the other one standing behind me. And they all had met each other and they'd seen them.
Are you now cancer free?
Oh, yes. And then 10 years later, George.
Good for you.
Remember, they told me they wanted other people to see them, to inspire them, that they have guardians too. Everyone has one. And so years later, I said to my friend who was psychic, I said, maybe they want me to do your guardians. You see mine, big deal, but what if you see yours? So I tried to draw him, and he's Italian and Persian. He's part Iranian. And man, those figures look like spirits from the other side.
Well, you have to get these pictures to us. Ginny, we're coming up on a break here pretty soon, but get me the pictures. George at coasttocoastam.com, if you would. I would love to see these. I'm convinced we all have angels following us and guardians watching us. I was pumping gas today, as a matter of fact, and I think one of my angels said, it's almost $5. Don't pump it. Wait. But I think it's going to go even higher, believe it or not. I really do. In a moment, when we come back, we'll take more of your text messages. We'll take also your phone calls. Skype is open. That code to get in is George97313. We've got another hour to go of open lines for you here. I'll also tell you what's in store next week. Great group of shows. Plus, John B. Wells is on Saturday, first Sunday of the month. I will be on a split show. Great guests, also emerging artists, incredible artists who don't have an opportunity to let folks hear their work. We'll play it on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.